You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning, Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Network. We hope that your day is off to a great start. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning, I'm Brian Noonan. Interesting fact, and a little bit sad, as of May 2025, more than 689,000 Wisconsinites, or about 12% of the state's population, rely on food share benefits, which is nationally known as the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. They now officially are operating under new work requirements. Those new requirements are part of several changes to the program. To make sense of that and how it's going to affect people here in Wisconsin, Jackie Anderson joins us. She's the executive director for Feeding Wisconsin. Feedingwi.org is the website if you want more information. Jackie, thank you for being here. We do appreciate your time. So what are these new guidelines and changes, not only for the recipients of food share, but for the state itself?
So let's start. First of all, thank you for having me here. Let's start off with what the work requirement changes are going to be. So traditionally, people who were at the age of 54 had to provide work requirements, but that has now been bumped up to now 64. So if you are someone who is on SNAP, you now have to provide work that you're working at least 80 hours per month. And that also qualifies if you have a child who is under the age of 14. So two things changed in that. The number, the age of the child, and then the age of the recipient who is on SNAP. So when you're looking at the number of people, based on the numbers that you just said, Brian, in Wisconsin, it's going to impact about 43,000 Wisconsinites who will now have to meet these new work eligibility requirements. So that's a work eligibility piece. The other pieces that are now a result of HR 1 or the One Big Beautiful Bill is a cost shift that we will now have to pay on the administrative side. We also will have to then pay administrative costs. And so it's the work requirements and the administrative costs are two of the biggest things.
So, Jackie, how is this going to affect households? Because obviously we think of families, we think of children, but there's also elderly adults and people with disabilities who use these programs. So how is this going to affect those households, especially when we're talking about maybe somebody who can't meet the work requirements?
Yeah, it's a great question because we at the food banks and at the food pantries are always thinking about this because we know that transportation, especially in our rural communities, is absolutely an impact. So if transportation is an issue, if we're, there's not opportunities for people to work, it is absolutely going to impact that. So we at the food banks, again, are looking at how can we offer volunteer hours to help meet people so that they can actually meet those work requirements. So it is a conversation that we're having with other business leaders too, like how can we offer those additional supports? Because, 10 more years of having to work is probably not on everybody's radar. Oh.
Jackie, I remember when this came out, when these changes started coming out, and I'm sure I'm not the only one whose biggest question was why. What was the justification for these changes and bumping up the age requirements for proving work? Where did this come from? Was there scandal, or is it just kind of the administration's track record for not really caring what happens to people who need help?
Yeah, I think it's more the latter. I think it's really just making it difficult to be on SNAP, I think is one of the goals. And, it's our role to support people and meet them where they are and do what we can to help make sure that they don't lose their eligibility or lose their, their opportunity to get food.
Jackie Anderson, Executive Director of Feeding America Wisconsin, joins us right now. Feedingwi.org, if you want to check out the website. We know that there are a lot of places in Wisconsin where there's food insecurity, a lot of food deserts. But how hard are these areas being hit right now? And what does this look like going forward, especially with these new requirements, Jackie?
Mm-hmm. Across the board, our food banks, and we've got 6 food banks here in Wisconsin that we work with and support, we're seeing on average about a 30 to 45% increase. So what that means is the food banks are like the warehouse, and then they distribute food out to food pantries. Across the board, we're seeing about a 30 to 45% increase for a variety of different reasons. Rent is going up, inflation, you know, groceries are expensive. So people are having to use pantries as a way to keep food on the table. So we know that that's happening. We also know in some parts of our state, Milwaukee in particular, grocery stores are closing. So that food desert that you alluded to, Jamie, is getting bigger and bigger. On top of that, we have rural communities where, you know, some communities are lucky if they have a quick trip. Otherwise, they're reliant on a Dollar General or, you know, maybe another gas station that doesn't have the fresh produce, the fresh meats and dairies that we know are required to have a really healthy diet.
What is anybody exempt from this? Are there groups of recipients who are already on the program that they're not going to be affected by this at all? Or is it just the people who have to change their ages?
There are some people that are exempt from this, and our state has a really great system. Like, I will say this over and over when we're looking at SNAP implementation, and you know, they are really making sure that they have a number of exemptions that are available for people who actually need it. So we have a really, really low error rate. I don't know if we want to get into that, but
we have
really, really good systems in place to be as supportive as possible. So yes to your question, and I will say the Department of DHS is really doing a good job in making sure that everybody who can use those are able to.
So one of the biggest misconceptions I think we hear about SNAP benefits is that it's just people who are unemployed, right? But there are a lot of working families who are also using SNAP benefits. So is this going to affect mostly those people? Is this like, clear up those misconceptions, I guess, would be my, it's not really a question, but can we clear up those misconceptions as to who this is really going to affect with these changes?
So it's going to affect working families for sure. We know that, again, because people are going to have to work a little bit longer. But I think it's also going to, you know, we have to really think about, again, the cost of everything. Like, how is that playing into this? Because if they're not able to get food share, or if they're no longer eligible, then they're going to have to figure out a different way to make ends meet. And, you know, I think, thinking about like that people are getting hundreds and hundreds of dollars too, that's another huge misconception. A person gets on average $6 per day. $6, like that is not a lot. So it's not as if, you know, someone's getting thousands of dollars. It's such a small amount. But it's the amount that if you are a senior, if you have disabilities, like every dollar counts. So, you know, it is, every dollar makes a difference.
Another one of the provisions that came out, and 18 states are doing this, they're placing restrictions on what food can be purchased with SNAP benefits starting this year. Is Wisconsin one of those states? And how do, when you hear those restrictions being put on in other places, how does that make you feel?
Nobody likes to have their choices limited, right? And so, you know, we are doing our best to educate legislators and really talk about the importance of choice and what that actually looks like. We do know that many other states have had to start implementing this. And one of the things, too, that I don't think everybody thinks about is the impacts on rural grocery stores. So imagine, you know, someone who's 16 or a senior who's working at a grocery store, and now they're having to determine whether a granola bar is actually a candy and doesn't fit into that. So I think, you know, obviously, clearly we're not in favor of this. You know, we have made that really clear. But I think we need to really think about the grocers, too, and how they're going to be impacted in this.
Yeah, that's a good point. We're talking with Jackie Anderson. She's the executive director of Feeding America Wisconsin, feedingwi.org. The grocery stores are a really good point because I think they do have to be a little bit of a factor in this, and the grocery prices. Are these benefits and the criteria that we're talking about, are they really keeping pace with any of the real cost of food that we're seeing not only in Wisconsin, but across the country?
Well, I think there's a couple different things in what you just said there. I I think the $6 a day is absolutely not aligned with what inflation looks like right now. But I do think, you know, the grocers are doing their best to make sure that they keep things at a minimum level. But, you know, inflation's high. And when you're looking at things like tariffs and other things that are being implemented, like everything is a factor.
Jackie, this all these changes were on a very short timeline between the time they were approved and the time you were expected and Wisconsin was expected to put them into effect. Wisconsin was part of a 20-state lawsuit against the administration. What was the basis of that lawsuit? What were like the rules that you were really trying to go after, and how did that play out?
So I think what you're talking about is the lawsuit around sharing data with the USDA. So that would mean that anyone who's a SNAP recipient would be, their data would be shared with USDA. So that too, Feeding Wisconsin has, you know, we're advocating on behalf of not doing that, of course. but I think it is, we'll see what happens around that. There's a lot of states that are very against this, just for privacy's sake alone. And we will continue to push back on it.
If someone's listening today and they're worried about losing benefits, or they know that they're maybe going to lose benefits with some of these new guidelines, Jackie, what options do people realistically have right now if they're faced with potentially losing what little money they're getting from the government for food?
Yeah, one of the things that I would recommend is still try to continue your benefits and talk to the DHS. You can go to the website. I'm happy to share that with you afterwards, because there are those exemptions that I talked about earlier. And a lot of times people don't necessarily think that they meet an exemption, and they do. And, you know, that's part of why we're advocating on behalf of keeping that quality control level really high when we're looking at the application process, because there are people who are trained. They understand, you know, what an application, what some of the barriers might be. They're really trained in working with people. So I think don't, you know, throw your hands up and say, I'm not going to be no longer eligible, but at least, you know, go onto the DHS website and talk to someone, because they're trained to help you.
Jackie, there's still people, and this is, I know, outdated thinking, but you mentioned before how many different people now are coming to food banks and trying to get help. There's still people, though, who need that help and who would be eligible for that help, who have an outdated notion of pride. Oh, I can't accept charity. Even if my family's struggling, I can't accept charity. What would you say to those people to hopefully change their mind and get some necessities into their hands?
Yeah, I think it's everybody is struggling right now. I mean, really, groceries are so incredibly expensive right now that there is no shame. If you do have shame, and we know that happens, many, many pantries have what's called a proxy. So if you feel uncomfortable going to a food pantry, you can tell someone else to pick up on your behalf, and then they can bring the food back to you. So, you know, we understand, and we don't want that to be a barrier for people to access food that they so desperately need.
Jackie, thank you so much. We're running out of time, and we are going to get that website for DHS from you before you go today, and we're going to post that in our show notes. So we will have that link in those show notes. You are listening. This was Jackie Anderson. Yep. I forgot to reintroduce you as we get ready to go. We do. So this is Jackie Anderson. She is the executive director of Feeding America Wisconsin. You can check out that website. It is feedingwi.org. And again, the link to DHS. If you are worried about your SNAP benefits and you're worried about eligibility, we will put that in our show notes. Just go over to civicmedia.us. You are listening to Civic Media Mornings. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. This is the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Right now, thank you so much for joining us on the Civic Media Network. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. That was AJR, which
Yes.
I That last sentence, I don't know what it means.
Alex, Jack, and Ryan, three brothers in a band. There you go.
Is that that's who they are,
that's,
really?
Yes, that's exactly who they are.
All right. And why are we playing AJR? That seems like an odd choice for us.
It would be a little bit of an odd choice, except for the fact that they are going to be at the Wisconsin State Fair this August, and you can find them on the Bank 5-9 main stage by grabbing your tickets when they go on sale this Friday, 10 a.m. at wistatefair.com. Except we have your chance right now to beat the box office here on Civic Media.
Text
away. That's right. All this week, we are going to be giving you a keyword and a chance to win a pair of tickets before they actually go on sale. So you need to get your Civic Media app ready. You can download that for free over at your Google Store or your Apple Store. And today's keyword is WIN. W-I-N. WIN is your keyword. Now, again, use your Civic Media app.
What do I have to do with this?
You just have to go to the Civic Media app, and then you have to use the app to text us the keyword WIN, W-I-N, for your chance to qualify for a pair of tickets to see AJR at the Wisconsin State Fair before they go on sale, and you have until 8 o'clock this morning to text us, again, the word WIN before 8 p.m.
That sounds too easy.
8 a.m., 8 p.m. 8 a.m.
They're ripping
us
off for tickets, as they used to say back in the day. Yeah, 8 a.m. You can text the word WIN. Go to the app. If you don't have the app, you have time to download it.
You do.
About a half hour.
We've got Dee and John over here already texting in. So keep the text coming for your chance to go see AJR and win some tickets before they go on sale on Friday. Des texting in now. Thank you so much, everybody, so far for the text. We appreciate it. Exciting stuff.
I look forward to the fair every year. I have a good time, of course,
because
I love wandering around. I love a cream puff. That pavilion is insane. I also like the in the kind of the big exhibition hall where they have all the little stands and all the little things. I wander around there. I've gotten everything from summer sausage to cufflinks in that exhibition hall, and I'm not exaggerating. Every year I look forward to this one place that makes this summer sausage. It's great. And then I got a pair of Spider-Man and a pair of Captain America cufflinks at another one of the stores. So are the little stands. And I got a couple, of course, Wisconsin State Fair Christmas ornaments for the tree and another one. I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff.
I got to say, I love a good state fair. Before Mike Lindell was insane, I actually got myself my pillow at the state fair.
I think it's great that you got it there when you could order it at home anytime.
It was cheap. I'm at the state fair. I got a regular one and a travel one for the same price as the regular one on TV. But
that's how they get you.
But
they
then Mike Lindell became Mike Lindell, and I quickly got rid of my pillow.
I was going to ask.
I do not have a Mike Lindell my pillow anymore. Although I do feel like I kept him from bankruptcy for just a little bit longer with my contribution. You know, who doesn't love a good cream puff on top of it?
I listen, as a guy who didn't grow up in an agricultural community, I am enthralled by walking around the dairy pavilion and
it's a blast.
Going and seeing these hogs that are
mammoth,
just gigantic, and I'm like, I don't know how they ever walk, because every time I see them in the pavilion, they're laying down.
Oh, of course.
It's like, that makes more sense, because you weigh like 8,000 pounds.
Yes. Would it shock you, if this is a flowchart moment, if you knew that I was in 4-H? I did show dogs.
You were from South Dakota.
I was from South Dakota.
I
didn't do the egg stuff. I showed dogs. I helped my friends take care of the sheep and get them ready for show. But I did have baby bunnies. I had little pig, little dwarf bunnies. Short time. Yeah, exactly. I had my little dwarf bunnies, and I showed my dogs, and I did lots of baking, and I did, I built my dad did construction, so he helped me build a napkin holder one year. They got a purple ribbon and got to exhibit that at the state fair. I know.
If I had grown up somewhere where there was a big state fair, I would have done all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, it was super fun.
I spend, and this is embarrassing, I spend an inordinate amount of time at the dog diving exhibition.
Who?
I will sit and watch those dogs jump in the water for hours. And it's fascinating. And
part of me is
a little judgmental. My dogs will never do that.
Right. And then I look at mine and I'm like, why can't you do anything? Where's your skill at?
Dorks. Just dorks. But yeah, so anyway, you have about a half hour.
Yeah.
Text the word WIN using the Civic Media app, which is easily accessible anywhere you get your apps.
Yes.
And text the word WIN and you'll get a chance to win AJR tickets at the State Fair before they go on sale. Tickets, of course, go on sale Friday at 10 at wistatefair.com. So we thank them for the tickets. The Guthrie family, we're following this. We're into the third week. Things are not looking good, in my opinion. But they did. The sheriff came out yesterday and explicitly said everyone in the Guthrie family has been cleared as a suspect. To say otherwise is not only hurtful and wrong, but it is hampering the case. And so, yes, there is everybody in that family, siblings, spouses of siblings, everybody is cleared.
Yeah, the president came out yesterday and said whoever's responsible face the most severe consequences if Guthrie is not returned safely, possibly including the death penalty, which, as you can imagine, is not helpful because they want Nancy Guthrie returned or at least some actual reputable information. Harry Levin over from TMZ says that he received yet another letter. Whether or not that's verified or not, he's working
How
with...
How does Harvey get all these letters? Where are they all coming from?
I have no idea. It's weird, right? Like, why would that be the first person you'd go to? But he's working with authorities to see if there's any actual verification to it. So we appreciate that, I guess.
They're
but
looking at DNA and some gloves.
Yeah. You got to think that you feel for the family at this point.
Yeah, definitely.
729 right now, Civic Media Mornings. My name is Jamie Martinson.
Hey, Birkebeiner's coming up.
Love
we'll have a preview after this.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning. It is Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Radio Network. And if you are listening in Madison on WMDX or in Wausau on WXCO, maybe even in La Crosse on WLCX, we are certainly glad that you're here. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Thanks for being with us this morning. All right, all eyes next week will turn north. We will be looking at the American Birkebeiner, the race that has started off very tiny years ago, and now has become a global event. Greg Gunderson joins us this morning. He is the morning show host and associate production director at 98Q Country in Park Falls. He covers the Birkebeiner extensively, and so we have decided that we need to pick his brain. Greg, thanks for being here. We appreciate it, man.
Thank you for having me, Brian, and good morning, Jamie. It's good to be here.
We're so glad that you're here today.
We are glad. Here's the most important question, Greg. Everybody's excited to get all the details, but how's the snow and what's the forecast for next week? Because everybody remembers a couple years ago when people were cross-country skiing in mud. So how's it looking?
It's looking better than it was a couple years ago, Brian, but I will say there is at least some small concern with the temperatures approaching what they are currently, at least on this weekend's forecast. That said, you got to remember that they've developed a plan for almost no snow. And what you're referencing a couple years ago with the mud, the amount of snow that they generated at the time, they actually made a loop track that was capable of hosting the number of racers and races necessary, which we're talking about tens of thousands of racers over the track over the course of that weekend. So even if everything melts by the end of tomorrow, okay, I'm not saying from a cold start they'd be able to make that much snow, but they're able to pull off some pretty impressive things. I actually wouldn't be surprised, Brian, if they're banking on, and forgive me, no pun intended, they might be building some snowbanks in anticipation of this. That's with the amount of generation they can do now, it would be a pretty good idea, I think, as temps approach the 40s. But it's hopefully going to be a little more snowy than it was a couple years ago. We can depend on that.
Fingers crossed.
So the Birkebeiner brings thousands of people to this area, which isn't huge in population. And as somebody who's watched this event over the course of your life, what's it like to suddenly share your community with the entire world, Gray? Because essentially you will be sharing it with the world over the next few days.
It's so difficult to draw a parallel, Jamie, because unless you're from a small town which hosts a high volume event, you've never lived somewhere. And hey, even if you've been to Minocqua in the summer, or if you've even been to the Birkebeiner or the Lumberjack competition that happens here in the Northwoods, right here in Hayward, same town as, well, same area as the Birkebeiner, it's really difficult to appreciate the effect it has. I think the closest thing that a large number of people might be able to hold up as a yardstick is a Packer game. Especially about 10 or 15 years ago, before Titletown was really developed and everything within a couple hundred yards of the parking lot was grandma's house. Like if you were at Lambeau up until about 2010, 2012, like there was this feeling like, that's right there. Who did this? It felt like a little kid had designed the structure of Green Bay. That's kind of what it feels like. There's no parking. There's no seat at any table at a restaurant, but everybody's in this fantastic mood because much like that Packer game, it's the lifeblood of the economy for that entire span. And it has effects, you know. People are in a better mood for 2 or 3 weeks after the Berkey, both because it's been there and because it's over. It's a lot of energy spent.
Gray, for those of us who came to Wisconsin later in life, other than just traveling through, what's the history of the Birkebeiner? Because I learned it once I got here, what a huge deal it is, not just for the Hayward area, but for the entire state. But for the uninitiated, where did this start and how did it go? I mentioned from a small group to this worldwide event.
Well, actually, you could pick a couple different starting points, Brian. We could go back to the 1970s when a local here up in the Northwoods decided that he wanted to commemorate a historical event with a ski trip that, forgive the pun again, I'm afraid they're inevitable, it snowballed into what we see today slowly over time as attention was built to it, especially as people realized that the snow up here and the weather are incredibly conducive to some off-season skiing to some people, depending where you're from in the world. And that's the thing, they're coming from the world over. But really, you want to ask where it started? The year was 1174, and we're looking at the Norwegian wow. Civil War. I'm not even kidding here. Wow. Birkebeiner refers to birch bark leggings that were worn by some Norwegian soldiers. And those soldiers were skiing down a mountain with a baby prince in their arms, trying to save him from the Civil War. There was basically another group coming to get him. That was the Civil War. And they made it. They skied through the mountains with a baby. And that baby went on to become the next king of Norway and ended that very Civil War. So there's a pretty cool story. Pages wow. and pages long, you can find on your favorite search engine.
I love that. Thank you. A little That's history, great. Brian. Would it surprise you if I'm very excited to know that kind of history right
no,
now?
No, and I think it's, people would go, because I knew back to the 70s. I was like, oh, sure. That's where it's, now I'm going back to the 1100s and the Civil War. It's great.
Yes, absolutely. It's actually a major piece of history in the country of Norway that they touch on too. We are borrowing the race from them. There have been Birkebeiners. Okay. There are multiple Birkebeiners. And in fact, there's kind of a world circuit, and there are athletes who do this and specifically try to do it in all the different countries that do it. Wow. There's a name for that, and there's a, you know, it's kind of like climbing the 10 tallest peaks. There's a mark of pride and everything but the sash that the Boy Scouts wear for completing these kinds of races.
We're talking with Gray Gunderson. He's the Associate Production Director of 98 Q Country in Park Falls. We're talking about the Birkebeiner. Now, you mentioned a little bit about the local economy, Gray, and the influx of people that come in. So what does this mean for the local businesses, for the people on Main Street, the restaurants, the hotels, shop? Does this become some sort of make or break weekend for some of these businesses in the area?
Yes, in a way, because it's not that the business can't survive without it, but suddenly there is no real backup plan necessarily. And the only option after, you know, if there was a theoretical non-Birkebeiner year, the only option would be to scramble to find some way to deal with that. And I'm immediately reminded of, you know, we were talking of a couple years ago when there was so little snow and they had to do that loop trail and generate the snow like that. It would be a major economic event. And I'm glad to say we don't necessarily know how big of an impact it would have, because as these towns, I'm afraid towns the size of Hayward, 2,500 or so, and in counties like Sawyer, they're not on the rise these last 10 years or so. Sure. Unless there's industry moving in, it's stuff like this that's really buoying them. So unless you've got something like a high school sports team that gets a lot of attention and acclaim, and you know, we're just not in that kind of area, these are huge. So it's you've got the trails that are the lifeblood of the local economy because they keep the people flowing in and out, and it's something unique. You know, you can drive through any town. You can't ATV through every town. So go Northwoods on that count. Snowmobiles in the winter. And if either one of those is missing, it's like half the year is just lopped off of the revenue stream. So again, the Birkebeiner is just one weekend. But I'd say for some businesses, it might be as much as 5 to 10% of their annual income.
Wow.
You mentioned it's the one weekend. Tell us some of the other events, because there's the big race. That's on Saturday. But
yes,
then events start. You've got open track on Wednesday and other things that happen on Thursday. So give folks a highlight if they are going to try to make it up there to the weekend.
First of all, there's no wrong way to do it, because just like you said, Brian, there are events going on at all times, usually in the week leading up to the Berkey. That's been changing a little bit as COVID challenged the system. And of course, again, that snowless winter a couple years ago. So different events have kind of been on the rise, but you can see things happening right in the downtown streets of Hayward, like the giant ski competition. One of my personal favorites. You get four people on two skis locked together. Think of those old village people imitators that would have like mannequins on poles.
Yes,
it kind of looks like that, but give them all free will and they fall over a lot more. There's also some more competitive events, things like Ski Jor, which I think a lot of people would love if they knew about it. One person, one dog, one rope, two skis. Go,
wow.
Go fast and good luck.
So the dog's pulling you, or you're pulling your dog?
Well, hopefully the dog's,
or the dog's
you
on the skis.
Okay.
You know, I thought I gave you a pretty clear picture there, but I see now that I was lacking some detail.
No, but no, because you're right. I didn't know about that, but now it sounds like something. How did I miss this my entire life? I'm going
to
take my dogs
like
and see if they'll
see
pull me
now
on skis. Yeah, I have
you
to see
do
it.
Well, and I think it has an aspect that cross-country skiing just basically lacks, which is something to pull me. That's the problem.
Yes.
I like gravity.
Yes.
There's a reason I'm a downhill skier.
Brian, if you try that with your two senior dogs, make sure you take a video for us, okay? Because we all want to see how that plays out
yeah,
for
but
you.
Then when they get when I get reported to the ASPCA, there's going to be trouble. So we're going to do this.
That. Okay.
We're
going to
do this in the dark of night in a forest preserve.
So, Gray, the Berkey actually depends heavily on volunteers. And so what role do maybe the locals play behind the scenes that a lot of people might not even realize as this is all being set up and for the weekend itself?
Well, I'll tell you what, anybody who's ever planned a project or more specifically an event understands that anytime you're gathering more than about 10 or 15 people in a space for more than about an hour, you start having to plan things like food and facilities and bathrooms. And I mean, these are athletes. These are world tier athletes. And yes, they bring their own supporting cast. But I mean, think of it. The business owners are running their businesses. The town and the Chamber of Commerce are doing what they can to kind of fill in the gaps that, you know, the streets are busy and occupied. There's a lot of work that needs to be done just to keep things running normally. So I'll tell you what, there normally aren't porta potties on the streets of Hayward, but not only are they there right now, they're busy and necessary, and I don't want to know what it would be like without them. So,
oh geez,
it's the kind of things. I mean, you know, a lot of us up here will think, man, I know these people coming up from, it's often Illinois gets a little bit of the hard reputation for it, but a lot of these people want to come on up here, but they don't want to do the work to keep the businesses open. And that's not quite true. The people that come up are fantastic, and many of them would pitch right in. That's what's happening. Everybody has to pitch in, or the town quite literally wouldn't be capable of hosting an event with this many people. It's hard to put a finger on what exactly everybody does. It's everything.
Well, let's play off that logistics a little bit, because you mentioned 2,500 people in Hayward. We know when the NFL draft was happening in Green Bay, people were staying all over the state. I can't imagine there's a ton of luxury hotels and things in that area. So where do people, if they're one, coming in to compete, and two, if they're just coming up to visit and observe and enjoy the Berkey weekend, where do people stay? How do they get then into town and to the track? And just logistically, it sounds rough.
That's a brilliant question, and you're very correct. Worth mentioning is, of course, with the length of the track, the starting point and the ending point are so far apart that there are shuttles just in place for the spectators, but for the athletes as well. But as far as accommodations go, I'll tell you what, Brian, it is the middle of February 2026. The hotels in the area are booked probably into 2028 for this time in coming years, just because there's that much advanced need given the availability. So what you're seeing is people spreading wide. You're seeing people in the neighboring county. One thing that there's a lot of polarizing feelings on the idea of Airbnb moving in and taking up some property ownership. We won't get political, but I'll tell you what, people are really glad for Airbnb on a month like this.
Sure they are.
It is. It's kind of like, think of it like the reserve force of lodging. You know, if you don't need it all the time and it can be used for other things, but hey, when we need it, call in the extras and Airbnb, cool. Grandma's house looks pretty good for that skier from Norway.
People will pay $50,000 to sleep in a shed. They don't care.
As long as you have a bathroom and maybe a cot and we're good to go. Gray, we've got about a minute left. If someone listening right now has never made the trip to Hayward for the Berkey, why should this be on their bucket list?
Because not only is there a Berkey in Hayward this weekend, every day in Hayward there is a muskie that's hundreds of feet tall. And if you don't know what a muskie is, you can climb up into its mouth and learn about it from the inside if you want. That's much less disgusting than I just made it sound.
Sold. That is nothing else. If I can't make it up up there the 18th to the 22nd for the Berkebiner, you can always get all the information. Berkey.com is where you get all the information about the Berkey. It sounds like we got to get there one of these days.
I think
It's totally unique.
Don't put me on skis, though. Don't put me on skis, though.
Greg Gunderson's the morning host of the Associate Production Director at 98Q Country in Park Falls. He's a Civic Media team member. Gray, we appreciate your time today. Thanks a lot, and have fun. Have fun next weekend with all these new porta-potties all over the streets.
Hey, they're not my problem. Thank you, guys.
Life will never be the same with all those porta-potties. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Right now, thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Civic Media Network. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Hopefully you're having a good start to your Fat Tuesday. Remember, it's Punchki Day. Get to your local bakery. Treat yourself. Go off your diet for at least one meal and have some fun before Lent starts. We just heard from Gray Gunderson talking, and my first question was about the conditions. Well, if you are in the northernmost part of Wisconsin, if you are up in Douglas County, up that way, man, you could be in trouble because there's a winter storm warning. Up to 8 inches of snow, 40 miles an hour winds in Douglas and Bayfield counties possible today. If you're listening to us up there.
Which extends all the way through Thursday. So it starts this evening and will extend all the way through Thursday. So hopefully that means that the conditions for the Berkey, based on the last few days of really warm weather, are going to be good over the weekend. At least that's what we're hoping.
And isn't it funny, in some areas, like, they're probably praying for the snow up there. And we're praying that the 60-degree days stay. It just depends on where you are. But like when we talked to Gray, we talked to other people from the North Woods, boy, those businesses really need this time of year to be snowy.
Yeah. They really do. I mean, their livelihood up in that area depends on the outdoor activities, right? So you're looking at not only really nice weather that brings people in the spring and the summer months, but then in the winter months, especially when you're talking about an event like the Berkebiner, you're really hoping for those fabulous winter conditions, even when the rest of us don't want them at all.
Listen,
them up north.
If you're in Douglas and Bayfield County, good luck to you. I hope you you're prepared. See, that's the thing. If you live in those areas, you're prepared for these kind of things because the snow comes off Lake Superior and you're buried, all the time.
Right.
You're just used to it. It's like if you live in Buffalo and you're surprised by the snow, you're really not paying attention.
Right. So exactly. Exactly. But this leads us all to a good point when we're talking about winter weather, right? Because there's an online platform for booking fishing trips around the world, and it's called Fishing Bookers. And they just put out their 2026 list of 10 best ice fishing destinations in the United States. And it happens to include one right here in Wisconsin, maybe up by lovely Green Bay or so.
Before you mention that, I would like people to explain to me, because I understand the allure of fishing off a dock or on a boat in the spring and summer. It sounds lovely. And I honestly don't understand. So this is not a criticism. This is genuine curiosity. What is the allure of ice fishing? And I'm not talking about the people who build like a condo that they drag out on the ice. Because if you're one of those bucket ice fishermen, you know who I mean? You turn over that orange Home Depot bucket and you're just sitting there with an auger and you make a little hole and you're just on an open lake.
Right.
I don't understand it. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I don't understand it. If you could explain the allure of that to me, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. And while you're at it, after you make that phone call, then go to the Civic Media app and text the word WIN, because you can get some AJR tickets before they go on sale on Friday. So, okay, sorry about that. But
no.
I honestly, this
it's
is something I really don't
stuff.
Understand.
My
and
dad was
I
an
am
ice
always
fisherman.
Curious.
My dad was an ice fisherman. My dad did one of those little pop-up tents that he would take out onto the ice, but with the auger and things like that. And then he literally either had like a lawn chair or he turned over the bucket. That's what my dad did.
Okay.
Now, I will say I am not a great fisher person. I know that there's a lot of people who love it. There's this whole thing about complete stillness so you don't scare the fish. No, it's very difficult. Very difficult for me, as you can imagine. But if you're into that kind of thing, apparently you got to be in Green Bay if you want to do some ice fishing in Wisconsin. Because according to the Fisher Booker list, people who ice fish on the frozen Green Bay can catch whitefish, walleye, and northern pike. The surrounding area has plenty of entertainment as well, which is what makes them a top spot for a little ice fishing. Now, in addition to Green Bay, Fisher Booker's list of top ice fishing destinations for this year includes lakes all over the country, including Oneida Lake in New York to Brainerd, Minnesota's Chain of Lakes. Oh, have you ever been to the Chain of Lakes?
I have not.
Beautiful, beautiful area. You will not regret a trip to the Chain of Lakes. It also includes great areas like Great Granby in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado as well. So a lot of different areas if you love to ice fish, I think is interesting.
Brett texts in from Kewaunee, and he explains it to me. He says, fish taste better out of cold water. I will take your word for it, Brett.
Okay, all right.
That's it. Somebody else, Dave in New Berlin, who or what is AJR? Dave,
legit
fair
question.
One that I asked at 7 o'clock as well.
Yes.
Jamie, who again is AJR?
They are a young band of three brothers, Alex, Jack, and Ryan. Some of their hit songs include Bang, Way Less Sad, World's Smallest Violin, and Record Player.
Are you using hit ironically?
No, actually. Parker, you're young.
I am young. My high school girlfriend was very into AJR, actually.
Okay.
So, yes, I'm.
Oh, so
okay. I know
you want to go to.
No, I don't want to go to AJR.
If you want to win tickets to a concert with a lot of high school girls, text WIN.
It's upbeat kind of fun stuff.
You could get some tickets and then make her jealous by not taking her. There you go, Parker.
I feel fine.
Okay, all right.
You're going to pass? You're going to pass on the AJR? But listen, you go to the Civic Media app, you text to WIN, you text the word WIN, and maybe you make your teenage daughter the envy of all her friends.
There you go.
When one of her parents takes her to see AJR.
Yes, very, very exciting
or
stuff.
You can take her to the fair and you can go sit in the beer tent while she's in and listen to AJR and go, I'll meet you here by the funnel cakes.
Just make sure she can drive you home afterwards. You know, if you're going to be in the beer tent.
I could just be in the beer tent having water and listening to the music.
This is true. If you're in a beer tent at a fair, that's not what's happening. Let's be real.
Exactly.
It's 7:59 right now. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Have a great day. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again tomorrow on the Civic Media Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.